Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Hello, this is Stephen O'Doherty. Parliaments in two states, New South Wales and Victoria, are now facing the prospect of renewed debates about euthanasia. In South Australia, a bill to legalise assisted suicide was defeated last year by one vote. One of the most important arguments I know against euthanasia comes from people with disabilities. The argument relates to your view of the worth of human life. It's closely linked to discussions about abortion, another issue that's very current. Well, here's the question. If we advocate ending a life because of conditions that involve disability, cerebral palsy, spina bifida, even Down syndrome, then what does it say about how we value people living with those conditions? Well, my view on this has been influenced by a good friend, Athena Pavlis. She's an educator of people with a disability. She teaches a field called habilitation, and she also teaches churches about disability. In fact, Athena has a theology of disability based on her own life and what she calls the two worlds model. I began by asking Athena about the euthanasia issue.
It's a real concern for me as someone with a disability. I have cerebral palsy. I use a wheelchair and I drive a van. I've had cerebral palsy all my life. I'm a bit concerned about this euthanasia because it's kind of like decisions are made. People want to end their life because they're in pain. And I understand that. I don't want to minimise their pain, but as a person with a disability, I've come from a first 15 years of my life, I developed what I called my two-world theory. Now, in my two-world theory, in one world was my world, and that world was full of people with disabilities, a medical entourage of people making decisions for me, without me. And in the other world, there were people with no disabilities. And to be a Christian in the other world, I had to be walking and running. So
yeah, let's pull that apart just a little bit more. I want to go a little bit deeper on this. So you spent your early schooling years in a school for kids with disabilities.
That's right.
It was a centre, a specialised centre for kids with cerebral palsy.
Yes.
And these days, of course, we very much try to have kids with cerebral palsy in mainstream, you know, in with all the other kids.
That's right. And the push is moving towards that, and it's a great move.
But this contributed to your two worlds theory. So you were living in this world where most of the people were people with disabilities or people, well-meaning people trying to help them, right?
Obviously, yes. They were doctors, OTs, physiotherapists, speech therapists, always trying to treat me and give me the services and making decisions for me. When I wanted to leave the special school that I was at and go into mainstream, they were very opposed to it. And I really had to fight against that and say, no, this is what I want to do.
Why were they opposed to it, Athena?
They kept saying things like, you're going to get physically worse if you go to an ordinary school. And one teacher said to me, Athena, you're not smart enough to do the HSC.
Well, that's a rubbish for a start. You've got a master's degree, haven't you?
Well, that's right.
Yes.
That's right. And I was very tempted to send her my HSC certificate after that. In a loving way, my mum and dad also didn't want me to leave the security of this special school.
Yes. Right, so that adds up in your mind to what you've called the medical model, that you were a medical condition that had to be managed and treated.
That's right, Stephen. The medical model of disability says that what is wrong is with me, so I need to be fixed. And in Christian circles, I need to be healed. But when I went into lecturing at university, I discovered a thing called the social model of disability, which says that disability is not caused by my diagnosis, but by how our society is constructed.
Wow.
For example, I can't access your church building because of my disability, because of my wheelchair. And it's also saying that society has bought the lie that disability is a burden, it's a tragedy,
yes,
and causes a lot of suffering.
Now, this is interesting. I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about this. I've wondered for a long time, as you know, why we don't see more people with disabilities in our churches. If there's one place on earth that you ought to be very welcome and where we ought to see people with disabilities, it's in churches, but we don't. And it's not just the fact that they don't have a ramp, is it?
No, it's a lot of things. It starts with attitude, and it starts with a theology of disability and understanding what a theology of disability is and how important it is when we're approaching people with disabilities and how we can implement them and include them in our Christian communities.
So the equivalent of a ramp for a person with an intellectual disability, for instance, would be handout support material that was written in a language they can understand.
In a simple language that they can understand, yes. And also people who have autism, how do we make our churches accessible to people with autism?
Yep.
Well, we look at what are their barriers. They can't handle too much light, too much noise. So what can our church do to reach people with autism? And how can we structure our services, our sermons, our church activities to make sure that they're included?
These are great questions. Athena, I want to come back to the medical model question in relation to church, because I know that your experience of going to visiting different churches has been, firstly, remarkably homogenous, and secondly, remarkably disturbing. What do people say to you generally when they welcome you at a church?
I get mixed approaches, I guess.
You told me once that people often, very often, want to pray with you.
Yes. Ever since I've been a Christian since 1983, I've been approached by strangers off the street if they could pray for me. I've had ministers and pastors saying to me things like, "Oh, imagine what a glorious testimony this would be if you could get out of your wheelchair and walk." Now, well-meaning as it is, that is really offensive as someone with a disability, because it's saying that my worth in a wheelchair is nothing and therefore God cannot use me.
Yes, and this comes back to it. They weren't just offering to pray for you in your situation. They were praying to heal you, and I know that you've shared with me in the past just how hurtful that is, and it happens more often than you'd care to admit. This comes back to your theology of disability then. Are you a person just waiting to be healed? Is it some spiritual lack that means you have cerebral palsy?
Definitely not.
No, definitely not.
Now, if Johnny Erickson had been granted healing by God, I would not be a Christian, because it's through her life and her testimony in a wheelchair that I realise how much God loves me and accepts me. I don't have to change for anyone.
So here we get back, we've come around in a bit of a circle. We get back to the abortion issue, because I know that when you track the philosophy of people like Peter Singer to its nth degree, he will say, well, look, we need to prevent disability. It's a terrible thing to grow up in this medical model world. Therefore, you know, to be able to abort.
Stephen, it's happening right now. I went to a conference about a few weeks ago on disability, God and us, and they said at that conference that right now there are abortions happening because the baby has Down syndrome. Now, and I know of other parents who have aborted babies because of other disabilities. Now, their decision affects society as a whole. How do you think that person with Down syndrome that we see here today, what's it saying about them? What's it saying about their life, about their worth, you know?
And how different, and it's not much different.
Get rid of it, you know, we'll just we'll deal with it and we'll get rid of it.
Yes, and it's not very different to then say if you have a voluntary euthanasia law, well, we abort children because they might have a disability. Is it in your interests to actually, you know, be euthanized?
It's a very, very sensitive issue because I understand, I think parents again said the lie that if I have someone with Down syndrome, I'm going to be causing suffering on me, on the child. It's going to be a burden.
Yes. Athena, I want to say to you that people with disabilities are made in God's image. And I want to say to you that the world isn't complete unless we have everybody who God meant to be in our community as part of our community. And the world is not complete if people like, if you, Athena Pavlis, had not sown into my life, I would be so much poorer for it.
Oh, thank you, Stephen.
Oh, no. I mean, I just hope people can understand. This is about, these debates are actually about what it means to be human and what we value. They're not just about some convenient way of ending life.
Yep, and I think that's what's happening with this euthanasia thing. People are making decisions because they're afraid of what might happen. They're afraid of the pain. They're afraid of dying. So what are we going to do about that? Okay, what is palliative care doing? What can they do even more to support, to teach them that dying doesn't have to be painful, doesn't have to be scary. Let's talk about it. And yes, and you having this conversation tonight is fantastic.
And, well, that's thanks to you. Athena, so delightful always to chat with you. See you soon, eh?
Thank you so much. Cheers.
Thank you. That's Athena Pavlis, a long-time friend. My goodness, she's taught me a lot over the years. I've got to say, one of the very special moments, in fact, the reason that I connected up with Athena in the first place was when Johnny Erickson came to Australia as a special ambassador for the Paralympics in 2000. Can you imagine just how marvellous it was? Athena and I were on a committee that was working around those Paralympic Games, and Johnny was one of the ambassadors, and we had a bit to do with Johnny during that time, and I know that Athena has since visited her as well in the United States.